Sub, we're touching Rich Town Fair Tire Studios. Tom versus Time is a multi-part video of Tom Brady and his off-season training, and started to venture into the season a little bit. And very little Alex Guerrero, but it was. If you just heard the audio of Alex Guerrero, you would think you might have been watching some sort of pornography.
Yeah, we'll play some of that in a second. But this was a situation where going into it, it sure did feel like this was going to be a six-part commercial for the TB12 method and TB12. And boy, was the ad that they ran for it before it actually showed, it misfired. The "I have a warrior spirit." It was like, oh my God, what are we doing here? And it kind of came across as being something that it ended up not being. I watched it yesterday, and I was
skeptical.
Excellent.
I was skeptical like everybody else, and I thought the purpose, like, everyone else, this is going to be a commercial for TB12.
And it might end up being that.
It's going to get there.
Yeah,
but I think the, like, if the rest of these follow what the first one was.
This is Bert Breer, by the way, in studio with
us. Hey guys,
hey Bert.
This my belief is that he's trying to create a record. Like, that's what I think this is. That's what I think the main purpose of this is that. And look, I think this happens to a lot of guys who come through here because of all the rules and all the stuff that they can't do with the media and all that different stuff. You know, I think sometimes guys get to the end of their careers and they're like, crap, well, I want something to look back at.
Yeah.
I want something to show my kids when they're grown up. I want something that maybe someday my grandkids can watch. And to me, I think that's part of this, is that he's creating a record of who he was as a professional athlete.
Well, I don't know if it's a testament to the director or the people behind this documentary, but there were very few moments where he seemed super weird. One of them being, of course, when he's getting the weird massage.
Him.
Yeah, it really did. I mean, and it's completely a 180 from what I thought it was going to be.
It's
going to
get there.
That's what I'm saying. The first one, I had a feeling they were very cautious with rolling it out there, so people didn't immediately dismiss it as a commercial for TV12, like, which it might end up being.
It's like the Dr. Dre, Jimmy Iovine, like four-part documentary that just erupted into a big cell phone. It was just all about Dre Beats.
You could be right, yeah. And I have a feeling we might get there, because this was just trying to set up what this whole docuseries is going to be about.
You can't come out you can't jump out the gate. All right,
you can't. So, which clip do you want to start with here?
One of the we'll start with the first one that I have here. It's not in consecutive order, but a lot of people have seen this. But of course, this is Tom and Giselle driving back after they were crushed in the Kansas City game.
You're just...
You're not... You just... We're not in sync yet. You don't know each other. It's like building a relationship. The first time you meet somebody, you're not going to be their best friend. You know, it takes time to get to know people. They're going to get to know you, your looks, and the way you play, and the way you do things, you know? Get to know them. It's gonna be awesome. I knew it. Okay.
Am I the only one who thinks it's weird that he, like, drives around by himself? Like, when he's driving to Foxborough?
You should have chauffeurs and things like that. There's a great scene where he's pulling up and he's behind a car that's got Patriots logos and stuff all over it.
Well, that's
it's interesting because, you know, that's, like, kind of humanizes him, too, where when... Do you guys remember when the Philip Rivers story came out before the season, right?
Yeah.
Where he hired a driver so he could still live in San Diego and had, like, a film room installed in the back of, like, this, like, Suburban or whatever it was so he could do work on the way to the facility. The first thing I thought was, like, oh, Brady's got one of those.
You know what I mean? Like, they just see him get in his car.
Right.
And now, whether that's for the cameras or not, I believe that's real.
I don't know. Can you imagine if he broke down or something? Just a situation that would occur.
The best is that he's just sitting there in the car and she's talking to him.
And he wants nothing to do with it.
None of it. And he's pitching, turn left.
Seriously. That's like the speeding up. Like, all right, honey.
Well, that's the one thing that this, I mean, we've heard all these stories, but the one thing it shows firsthand in this documentary, the first at least part of it, is that he's a maniac. And he's a maniac about football. He works so damn hard, and it's an obsession that if you're any other team or any other player, that's got to piss you off to see somebody that every day is just thinking about it constantly, to the point where you leave that first game and it pisses you off so much you don't even want to talk to your wife.
Well, I imagine. Well,
I think he's the only one that goes through that. No, I think there are a lot of conversations like that between husband and wife.
I get pissed off at my wife all the time. And if I'm another player, I'm thinking...
And that's why that was such a great scene, because once again, it
that
humanizes
him. That does humanize him, yes, no, because but, the last thing he wants to hear is his wife saying, don't worry, honey,
and by the
fine.
Way, if I'm another player that's made $60 million and I don't behave like that, not in the car, but I don't bust my ass completely training all off-season, I would think to myself, wow, I got it pretty good. I get actually get to enjoy my life and have all this money. Well, this is... there's a scene where... Brady's goes and he has all these binders from past seasons, and he goes through some, and the first couple he grabs aren't Super Bowl years, so he grabs the one from last season.
So I still keep this. My suspension letter that I received. Just a nice way to remember. Thank you. So this is a lot of stuff that Belichick talks about in team meetings. That I write down. These are kind of his themes, so I'll read you some of them. Prepare and play well. Super Bowl environment is all about hype and ridiculous bull that will go on. It's a great week. It's about competition. The two best teams on the biggest stage, the team that wins is the one that works the hardest. There's a warrior spirit about me. I'm always in competition with myself. You represent a lot of people out there when you go out and play a game. And when you let people down, that's a very tough feeling to keep inside.
So that's a little Patriots fan.
Well, one of the best things he said, though, in there was like, you know, you could play one way or the other. He goes, did you win or did you lose? That's all that matters. Yeah. He goes, in the end, that's it. And you could tell he's kind of pissed when he's saying it. But I was watching that there, and there was already speculation as to what Belichick thought about him doing this documentary in the first place. And then he kind of takes out a sheet of something that was specifically put together by Bill Belichick, and it has his words. Do you think that he's completely kosher with Brady doing this docuseries and putting that out there, kind of opening the door to what is very purposefully a secretive operation?
I think if Bill had his choice, of course the answer would be no, right?
Yeah.
If this is up to Bill, the answer would be no. This is one of the few players who has the hammer to do something like this and who can say, you know what? I'm going ahead with this. And what's Bill going to say? I mean, that's the thing. It's like,
I mean, so, he can leave.
No, but I think
he can retire.
Rich, I think
you retire because he's a documentary.
No, it could be another thing. I mean, if you buy into the Wickersham thing, which you know, whatever.
But I think this is at the heart of all of that. Like, I think this is at the heart of all of that, and that Brady is like this great enabler for Belichick, right? Because he can coach him a certain way, and because Brady wants to be one of the guys, and Bill's coaching style is hard, right? Like, other guys have tried this in other places and have completely fallen on their face because players in this day and age won't take that kind of coaching, won't take a program that's set up that way. And when your best player is willing to take that sort of coaching and willing to act as if he's the 30th guy in the roster, well, that enables everything. And so for all of these years, the whole program, the way Bill's got the place set up, has been enabled by Tom Brady.
Mm-hmm.
Because no one else can walk in there. I don't care if it's Randy Moss. I don't care if it's a Dalis Thomas. I don't care who you are. Chad Johnson, Albert Haynesworth coming in here. Bill can say to any of them, you think there are special rules for you?
Yeah.
When there aren't special rules for that guy over there? And so because Tom's been willing to operate within the program for so long, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's enabled everything for Bill.
Sure.
That's enabled the entire program. And now Brady's getting to the end of his career, and he's starting to want to do some things that are outside of that, that are outside those boundaries. I think that's created some of that tension. Like, I think that's part of it, you know?
And even Belichick's opening up more than usual. I mean, a lot of these right. NFL films things, and there's got the...
Bill's done that for a while, though.
That's what I'm saying. It's been a couple years that he's kind of been letting more people in. I know that he's been open to being mic'd up more on the sidelines. There's the two Bills documentary that's coming out.
Is sort of revealing. They go into a little bit of stuff that hasn't been reported. All right, we have to break, Bert.
We will.
Learn the business, okay? And then come back to me.
You watching that clock, huh?
Yeah, oh, baby.
There you go.
Am I ever. All right, but when we come back, so you just heard two things. But then there were two things that were actually funny including something involving the Kowloon crew.
Which immediately, antennas went up.
Going, Brady didn't do anything funny, but things were done to Brady that was funny. Yeah. And then one of the Kowloon crew popped his head up and just said, I'm faking something. So we will have that for you.
Rich. Open your mouth wide.
On 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Hold me.
Great balls of fire. Guess who just crawled out the mountain mire? That can make you trust a liar. A real sucker diver. Vaughn never been a duck and diver. He spit on the mic, yuck saliva. Hold it like a truck driver. Hold a CB on a sharp turn. Still clutching the chest from the heartburn. What's your handle? I need a Zantac, Ock. And thanks before I blank into anaphylactic shock. Rock or disco, chocolate on a Crisco hole. Cock teasers, still tell a joke like Joe Piscopo. Tell him the basics. Basic
98.5, the Sports Hub. We are Toucher and Rich. The Brady versus Time, or Tom versus Time, whatever the hell it was called, was on, debuted on Facebook Live yesterday, and it was surprisingly not a total ad for the TB12 method. We'll see if that continues. It was fairly interesting. You got to see Tom Brady's car and inside his house.
Some legitimate behind-the-scenes stuff, too, which I liked, and, like, including the binders and the sheets that are given out for the Super Bowl. I think it was for last year's Super Bowl.
Right, right. All right, so Alex Guerrero does make an appearance, and I have it here, and Brady is laying on a table.
They start going into what it means to be pliable, and he does the whole thing we've heard a thousand times, is that, you know,
it
lengthens the muscle. And but one thing I did not know about the type of massage work that Alex Guerrero does is just how violent it is.
And this explains
aggressive.
This explains why players have gone into Guerrero and told him to massage things that weren't hurt, because they didn't want him touching anything that was hurt.
So, okay.
But this is Brady on a table, and listen to Guerrero just slapping him around.
This is his leg, and you see his leg just like
If I told you this was a dominatrix, and I just played you the noise, a dominatrix and her slave, you would believe me.
Well, I met Alex when he was coming to our facility to work with, you know, different players.
So this has been better through there.
That's better. That feels good. And I was like, yeah, you know, what can he do? What can he do that's been different than what everyone else has done for me, which is just, you know, ice your shoulder and take some rest. And boy, did I learn a lot.
Yeah, that's him touching his leg. Jesus.
And Brady's leg is, like, kicking all around.
He's massaging the hamstring, right?
Yeah. So, like, he can't. I guess it's just the muscle reaction of when you beat the snot out of someone's hamstring.
No, he's picking his leg up. No, he's picking his leg up.
I thought he was, like, hitting his hamstring.
No, he's slapping the sides of it. Like,
He's
picking his leg up and slapping it around. Yeah. But this sounds like you're at the Chelsea Hotel in 1979, and someone brought back a hooker.
I don't know that reference.
There it is.
I learn a lot. I see pliability as lengthening and softening.
Yeah, I mean, those hands, oh boy, to be those hands.
I mean,
he gets to get up high in there. Oochie moochie.
Yeah, it's like, okay, you know, when he was hitting the back of his thigh, I think that was just the muscle reaction.
Whatever it is.
Where you saw the leg, like the leg's kicking up.
It's going to knock his teeth out.
Yeah, there it is. His ankle's like crashing up against Alex's armpit.
If you ask me, this is the beginning of the, this is the beginning. This is the introduction of Mr. Guerrero to the world.
It might be, but if you're going to see this, I'm all in.
Oh yeah,
because this is so freaking weird. I mean, he's going from kneecap to ass cheek, just like as hard as he possibly can.
I think there's also an effort here to humanize Alex.
Of course. And there's going to be a lot of that, and that's going to backfire. That part I think is going to backfire.
All right, so here he continues to hump the leg,
and boy, did I learn a lot. I see pliability as lengthening and softening of muscles to get them back into balance.
Okay, relax there.
That feels good.
I mean, if I told you this was...
Muscles to get them back into balance.
Okay, relax there.
That feels good.
Muscles to get them back into balance.
Okay, relax there.
That feels good.
Balance.
Okay, relax there.
That feels good.
doing poppers.
Oh, my God. Jesus, Fred.
Show me more TB12 method. Now I'm in. Make it an infomercial. Yeah.
And this
care.
Is the introduction to it. I mean, I can only imagine what follows.
But you're right. Imagine that, Fred. Let's say you're Brandon Cooks. Let's say you're Brandon Cooks. And like TB12, you know, Tom Brady comes up to him and goes, hey, you know, why don't you try out my TB12 thing up there? You know, he'll get you all pliable. So he's like, okay, fine. You go up there and that dude does that to you. I'm running. I'm running out the door. I've never heard of a massage that looked like that.
Right. And we've heard that players have, you know, been kind of cajoled into going to the TB12 with injuries and then told them to specifically work on stuff that wasn't hurt. Because, and I wonder why now.
That's why.
Do you have the resin clip?
Yeah, I have it right here.
All right. So you can play the music and just combine them all.
Okay, relax there.
That feels good.
That's a little resin right there.
Okay, relax there.
That's a little resin right there.
They're having a gymnastic experience in that they're using resin.
Yes.
And they're right. going, that's, I that's realized halfway through my statement that it could be misconstrued.
Absolutely. All right.
Use resin when you do the pummel horse.
All right. And then there was this moment. Are we done with that clip right there? Okay.
No, there's 42 seconds.
Oh, please let it continue.
We're so close. You know, he's much more than someone that just works on me physically.
Prior to the season starting, we really try to, you know, get his brain to understand there's going to be impact and then prepare his body for the impact to almost feel as if it's normal behavior for him.
That's
a little bit. It's normal behavior for
him. That's a little bit.
It's unbelievable.
So again, it could be confusing. Mm-hmm. All right, here we go.
There's no way I would be here today without that. I mean, he's just been so influential in how I take care of my body, the process, the routine that we go through on a weekly basis in order to prepare myself to play without pain, with a lot of joy, and I can go to practice feeling great.
So when you're 39 and most guys would go, you know, I can fire that
He certainly let his guard down about making noise.
That's a little risky right there.
All right, and finally, for
the big finish,
because you can watch. You can watch this on your own, and you don't need us to play every clip for you.
But there was this moment.
Yes.
Fred and I had the same reaction, I'm assuming.
Yep. I had the exact same reaction. It's Tom Brady's in the backyard, and he's throwing the ball around. And lo and behold, you start hearing a voice in the background, a doubter in the background. And it is not it's not a hater. It's someone posing a question. One of the Kowloon crew.
Mm-hmm. Well, the Patriots season opener coming up. We're just hours away. And one guy that the Chiefs certainly are scouting is Tom Brady, who is 40. Yes, he is 4-0. So the question is, can he continue the pace now that he's officially over the hill? How much time left for Brady?
Okay, when was
Sarge here.
When was Sarge in a position to start,
all
like,
good, baby.
To start talking about, when was he on the air hours before a game?
What was that? He doesn't.
That was a jarring transition going from the hachi-machi over there to a Sarge salute.
Well, it's very strange because you're right. At what point, Sarge does the headlines. At what point is he the guy who presents his opinions? And me thinks that maybe this was a situation where it was recorded in a studio.
Think?
I'm going to say it's 100% recorded in a studio.
That's absolutely what happened.
I don't know how, because Bertrand's on there too, and I think there were some other people from the
Bertrand
station as well.
See, Bertrand is on pregame.
He is, and what I was assuming from that is that because he does pregame, the Patriots have the rights to all of that audio.
Right.
I understand
yeah,
that part of it.
And so they probably didn't have to ask Bertrand to be on there. They've got already the royalties and everything all set up. But as far as Sarge is concerned, that's just weird. It almost seems to me that Sarge like reached out to them.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. I wouldn't put that by him.
Well, Patriots season opener coming up. We're just hours away. And one guy that the Chiefs certainly are scouting is Tom Brady, who is 40. Yes, he is 4-0.
4-0. Sarge here.
That's right. I don't understand. We got to find out. Has anyone talked to Sarge?
Oh, yeah, all the time.
Yeah, well,
I'm constantly talking to Sarge. I can't get enough of talking to him. We're great friends. So
I want to know how he got involved.
All right.
Because it sounds organic.
I have a text message here. That interview was from his interview with Bob Soucy opening week.
What interview?
He did a podcast?
Yeah. Kaufman usually does it, but let's see.
Newman?
Mike Riley got Bob before Kaufman did. I don't know.
You know Sarge, okay. Sarge chloroformed Kaufman.
Hang on. So that was off the Sarge podcast?
I believe so.
How many downloads
opening
does that
week?
Have?
I don't know, 6.
And somehow the Brady people found it?
Yeah, well, Robert Kraft and Brady sit around the fire and listen to the Sarge podcast.
It's from an interview back when the place down the road was under the same ownership as us. So apparently Kaufman interviewed Soucy while he was working down the street on the AM dial, and for some reason, the Patriots picked that off.
Oh, no. From the AM side?
Yeah, it's from the AM side. Sarge was doing updates for the AM station.
Yeah, but that's not an update.
I
think he did an interview for WBZ AM. Yeah, I think that's what it was.
It was an interview for WBZ AM before the season opener.
With Soucy?
Yes.
I don't believe it. This is not an interview.
Well, Patriots season opener coming up. We're just hours away. And one guy that the Chiefs certainly are scouting is Tom Brady, who is 40. Yes, he is 4-0. So the question is, can he continue the pace now that he's officially over the hill? How much time left for Brady?
Subzo.
And now Sarge here.
And now joining us, Bob Soucy. That's the intro to the interview with Bob.
Long-ass intro. Okay. And then Bob said, no, I don't think he can do it. What a question for Bob Soucy.
And then Sarge put Kaufman on the table and went. Get out of here.
Okay, relax, sir.
That feels good.
Just relax, Kaufman. Relax, right?
All right. So there you have it. You can check that out on Facebook Live, and they will continue coming out. All right. We will have more with Bert Breer. Here are the headlines.
With respect to the balls, and that there was obviously an issue with the balls.
I don't think anybody knew there was an issue with the balls.
To me, those balls are perfect. I can only speak for myself. I don't want anyone touching the balls. Rubbing the balls. To me, those balls are perfect. Some guys like them round, and some guys like them thin. Some guys like old balls, new balls. They're all different, so you gotta feel them. And you gotta squeeze them. To me, those balls are all perfect. I choose the balls that I want. You know, I grip it, I grab it, I feel the lace, I feel the leather. I wouldn't want anyone touching the balls. I would zip those things up and lock them away. Some days one ball may feel good, the next day it may not. I want to be very familiar with the equipment that I'm using. This is a crisis. No one's dying, but this is a very important thing. Because to me, those balls are perfect. I leave no one speaking for myself. I don't want anyone touching the balls. Blowing the balls. To me, those balls are perfect. Some guys like them round, and some guys like them thin. Some guys like old balls and new balls. They're all different, so you gotta feel them. And you gotta squeeze them. To me, those balls are all perfect. You gotta feel them. And you gotta squeeze them. To me, those balls are all perfect. You gotta feel them, then you gotta squeeze them. To me, those balls are all perfect. You know, know, I grip it, I grab it, I grab it, I grip it. To me, those balls are perfect. Zip those things up, zip those up, and lock them away. To me, those balls are perfect. Like I said, I had no... Yeah.
The Sports Hub. We are Toucher and Rich. Bert Breer in studio from MMQB and NBC Sports Boston. And Doug Marrone. We were talking about Doug Marrone, Bert and I off air, and I didn't know this. Belichick was instrumental in him getting the job in Jacksonville.
Yeah, so when the whole thing blew up with the Jets a couple years ago, and you guys remember he had the opt-out clause with the Bills, and then our friend Manish Mehta wrote a couple columns, and then he wasn't getting the Jets job. He wound up going to Gus Bradley and talking with Gus Bradley. Bill found out that the two had communicated, so Bill put in a call to ownership in Jacksonville, said, I think you should hire this guy. Then 2 years later, Gus gets fired with 2 weeks left in the season. They install Marrone as their interim head coach. Bill calls the cons again and says, you've already got your guy there. The Bills teams that we played against when Marrone was coaching were the hardest playing, toughest, most disciplined Bills teams that I've seen in over 20 years in the AFC East. And so that went a long way towards him getting the Jacksonville job.
What is the incentive for Belichick to do something like that?
He loves playing Kingmaker. I mean, I think it's interesting because you hear about a lot of these things in the background where, you know, there have been some years where in November and December I'll hear that this guy or that guy has the inside track. Sometimes even before someone's been fired.
I mean, that's because of the blessing of...
And because Bill and Parcells, I think a big part of it is Parcells used to be that guy.
Mm.
Like, Parcells used to be this godfather in the NFL who was almost like placing guys in jobs, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And Bill's sort of become that. Belichick's got a lot of influence with a lot of the guys who help run these searches. Ernie, of course, he's a big one. Ernie, of course, he ran the search in Detroit. Bob Quinn wound up in that job. Ernie, of course, he ran the search in Atlanta 10 years ago. That's where Thomas Dimitroff wound up.
Mm-hmm.
And so there have been lots of cases where Bill has influence with people who are overseeing or consulting on these searches, and he has a way of getting his guys in place in certain spots.
Well, everyone, and you're seeing it this year more than anything. I mean, if you are from the Bill Belichick coaching tree, I mean, everyone wants to emulate that. I saw Brandon Marshall in inside
the entire AFC South. Think about this now. I just mentioned the connection with Marrone, right?
Yep.
So that's the Titans. Or that's the Jaguars. Titans, Mike Vrabel. Colts, Josh McDaniels. Texans, Bill O'Brien.
Yeah, right. Yeah. I mean,
the whole division.
I heard Brandon Marshall going off on Inside the NFL, and he said, essentially, shame on all of the other teams for letting the Patriots do this once again, for let them over and over and over again, letting them get to the Super Bowl. Why is it that no one can reach the level that they have reached, that no one can put together a culture like the Patriots have? And you hear it like when the Giants, I forget what player it was who was asked about what they would think about having someone like Matt Patricia in there, and he said he played under Nick Saban, and he goes, that's not a fun environment to play under, and I don't think people around here would want to do that. And
well,
then
look
you,
what happened when Nick tried, I mean, like, look how quickly Nick wore out his welcome in Miami.
Sure, yeah.
Like, that first year, they went, like, people act as if he was an abject failure in Miami. He wasn't. Like, they were awful the year before. They fired Dave Wannstedt in midseason in 2004, right? He comes back the next year. They go 9-7. And there were people who were picking them to go to the Super Bowl the year after that. And they made the wrong call at quarterback. They wind up signing Dante Culpepper because they couldn't medically clear Drew Brees.
Mm-hmm.
So that winds up kind of throwing everything sideways there.
Can someone, though, go
and
in?
So they lose a few games the next year, and then all of a sudden, a lot of the players are like, well, we don't want to put up with this anymore. And I've talked to guys who played there who felt like if they'd signed Drew Brees, like Nick Saban would still be in the NFL.
Well, can someone go in and do what Bill Belichick and put in that type of system, but not have the resume to back it up like Bill does? Because it almost seems like you can't replicate that anymore.
No,
because
I don't know. Because
Bill he's won.
I think Bill himself had to win quickly for it to work. Like, guys aren't going to, in this day and age, guys aren't going to put up with that. Like, the professional athlete of today isn't going to put up with that if, you know, you're 3-13 in year one and then you're 6-10 in year two. It's just not going to happen.
If Brady doesn't replace Bledsoe, does Belichick have this system in place?
Well, we already talked about that.
Well, you guys know this. Like, he was on the hot. He was considered to be in the hot seat going into 2001.
Mm-hmm.
Like there was no guarantee, like at the beginning of that year, that he was coming back for 2002. If they went 5-11 again,
yeah.
I mean, Pete Carroll got fired for going 10-6, 9-7, 8-8. You can't let, like, you have to have results. And now Bill can do whatever he wants, you know, like, because he's got the skins in the wall, rightfully so. 5 Super Bowl championships. But there's a reason why when guys go and try to run the program that way in other places, it doesn't work. And I don't think it's any coincidence that you see the one coach who's had a lot of success somewhere else is a guy that's come from this tree. And I'm talking about recent, not guys who coached under him in Cleveland, but in New England. The one guy who's had the most success is Bill O'Brien, who actually came up somewhere else, you know, and developed somewhere else and was kind of part of, you know, like he, I think if you ask O'Brien, he'd say, well, the guy who really developed me as a coach was George O'Leary.
Yeah, and his personality is so much different than Bill Belichick's. Like, he doesn't, he seems to be
he's
a player's coach, right?
He's his own man.
He does. And like, they seem to, he's not grim. He seems to be a little more likable.
Well, and if you've only seen it, like if you're Josh or Eric, like when they were coming out, like a decade ago, like, and you haven't seen it done any other way.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it came down with McDaniels to wearing the same kind of clothes. And also Mangini, it was interesting to see him on ESPN as an analyst because you could tell he was completely pretending to be Bill Belichick. He was pretending to be someone else. It's like when people, you know, listen to Howard Stern growing up and they take like one part of his show that wasn't like the important part and start no, I'm just talking about in generality.
Sure.
But like
just hypothetically
speaking. Right. No, I really am. And but the thing is that they'll take like, well, Bill was really gruff, like with the media, or Bill, you know, and it's, well, that's not why he's successful. Yeah. That's like part of a stew that makes him successful.
It's probably 1/100th of the reason that he's that way.
Right. And so you're taking things that are unnecessary from his personality and the way he does things and acting like that was the biggest deal.
It's also who he is. You know, like the one thing that I'll say, and God knows, professional athletes aren't always the most intelligent people, but the one thing that they all seem to have in common is they all have a ridiculous BS meter. They can tell when somebody's full of it.
Sure.
And if you're trying to be someone else, I think that they snuff that out. They, like, most of those guys can sniff that out pretty quickly. This is who Bill is. So there's no BS to this. You know, right. Like, this is who he is. Whereas if it's someone else, like a young Josh McDaniels or a young Eric Mangini, and I think Josh has gone way past that, but
sure,
like, and they see you going up there and acting like that, and they're like, that's not who he is.
If Bill is, who's the heir apparent?
All right, well, we'll have to get that. That's a wonderful cliffhanger, but we will break and we will be back with that answer.
All right.
The games are only half of it. Hutcher and Rich, 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Bert Breer from MMQB and NBC Sports Boston in studio. So Rich asked you the question, Bert, who is the heir apparent now that McDaniels and Patricia are gone?
Well, I would have told you, even before they left, that I think Bill O'Brien would have been the one that may have been the Kraft's top choice. Now, he's obviously just signed a new extension in Houston, so he's off the board. I don't know that McDaniels or Patricia would have had desire to stay here. Because we've talked about this, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, do you really want to follow Belichick? I don't think so. I mean, look, here's the thing. Okay, you win 10 games here, that's nothing. You win a division title here, that's nothing. How do we talk about all the other coaches in the NFL? I mean, Felger was sitting here for 4 hours a day during Pittsburgh week talking about Mike Tomlin, who's been to 2 Super Bowls and won one, like he was Rich Kotite. That's the way we talk about other coaches. Why? Well, the reason why is because we've seen it done. We've seen it such a tight operation for so long. It makes everyone else look like a clown, you know? Like, we've seen mistake-free. Like, they never mess up the clock. You don't see stupid penalties, right?
Yeah.
So, if you're a younger head coach, and you know, and you have choices, you have options. Do you want to walk into an environment where, A, winning at a fairly representable level, like winning like 10 games a year is nothing? Do you want to walk into a situation where, B, you know that the standard, the bar has been set so high that if you have some growing pains in year one, you're going to get crushed locally because of it?
Understood, but who do they go after?
That's what Josh had in Denver.
Sure.
That's like what Josh followed Mike Shanahan in Denver. He was fired. Like what? It took 28 games for him to be fired.
But I remember that year it was weird because he started off winning the first six, and then it was a massive collapse. There were those videos of, and he talks about it.
Beat the Patriots fist pump down the field.
And that's right. That's right. But like, you know, part of it was just following Shanahan.
Do you think Bill would help try to find the guy? I mean,
that's even more pressure.
That's a really fascinating question because that's sort of what he ran away from with the Jets.
Mm. Sure.
Because Parcells wasn't leaving the organization. Parcells moved into a front office role at the end of the 99 season, and he didn't want any part of that. So would he really hang around and be part of the next, of hiring the next coach? When that was sort of what he ran from in New York, that's an interesting question.
But I ask
interesting questions.
There's an element,
and we also have been given a lot of ums. We've been Chris Carter in the thing up.
Well,
I mean,
right
when you're getting that, a lot of ums will come out.
I mean, there have been some names that I think Mike Vrabel would have been an interesting name. Obviously, he's off taken the board now.
What about someone like Chip Kelly?
Brian Flores? Is timing going to match up there?
Well, let's say it doesn't. What about like Chip Kelly? He's a guy obviously who's had some failures in the NFL, but I know Bill Belichick obviously loved the guy at some
chance
point
for the next few years to build his resume back up at UCLA.
Why would he leave college again?
If he's smart, he wouldn't. I don't know that Chip would. What about Greg Schiano?
He loves Rutgers.
Yeah, but
Schiano
now?
He's the defensive coordinator at Ohio State.
Okay.
I don't think it's completely out of the question that he winds up here in a couple weeks.
What if he convinces Saban?
Gets
his buddy Saban.
I don't think it's completely out of the question that Greg Schiano winds up here in 2 weeks.
Oh, a disaster.
Okay, it winds up here.
In 2 weeks.
As the offensive coordinator?
No. I think Brian Flores gets promoted to defensive coordinator. And I could see a scenario where maybe Greg Schiano comes in as assistant head coach linebackers. Something like that.
Okay. All right. Well, that's
now
more acceptable.
Now, let's assume Flores might be out of here in a year or two. Because I think there are some people who feel like Flores has as high a ceiling as a head coach, because it's just the way he carries himself and everything else, as anybody who's been through that staff over the last 18 years. He's got a really high ceiling as a head coach. So let's assume that Flores goes through this process again next year or after the 2019 season, he gets a job somewhere. Okay, so then it's not Flores. Is it possible that Greg Schiano might be similar enough to Bill Belichick in certain ways where that might be the most seamless transition? And it's a guy who's been through it before and doesn't have won't have a zillion options to be an NFL head coach again, where he'd be very appreciative of the opportunity.
That's going to be exciting for all the fans.
I'm just saying,
it's just a scenario,
but if you guys want names, I mean, that's
Charlie Weiss, bring him back. Well, listen, didn't he say that for like he's been offered a ton of money to come back?
No, he said he's had conversations to come back in different places. Yeah,
in the NFL,
in the Star Wars.
Yeah, I mean, look at all the guys out there who have connections to Charlie that are getting jobs now. You know, that's part of it, is that like all these guys have connections, and maybe you're a Matt Patricia or a Josh McDaniels or a Mike Vrabel, you're getting a shot as a head coach, and you want to have like a veteran sounding board in there, then that makes sense.
You can't get rid of Jim Bob Cooter, I'll tell you that right now. All right, we will have the headlines when we come back. Rich, what is this
thing? Once again, the people, big Patriots fans, have stepped up and they've heard all the bad Eagles songs, and we said, you know what?
We can do that, too.
We can do that, too.
Because we haven't had these since.
We got some equal opportunity. We're going to have some equal opportunity time here. The Patriots fans have created their
Bubbaloo
own song.
Or whatever the hell the guy's name was?
Bubbaloo?
Who was the guy that rapped?
Oh, you're talking about the singing plumber?
No.
Juggalo.
Juggalo.
You got a call from
Antonio.
Yeah, he just said, I'm not going to stay on beat, nor am I going to rhyme.
I guess Jungle-O called in to, he loves Scott Zolak, obviously. He like, shows up where Scott Zolak is, which is nice, and unannounced. And so he, like, I guess he rapped over the phone for them the other day.
Do we have the audio of that?
Well, I wish.
Listen, the singing plumber got very, very angry at me for ignoring his emails years ago, and he is yet to come back. Here are the headlines, no commercials.
From the Town Fair Tire Studios.
It's the Cabanola! Touchdown!
The flagship station of the AFC champion New England Patriots. WBCFM and HD1 Boston. 98.5. The Sports Hub, the Beasley Media Group station. Sports Hub headlines.
Bruins have now earned at least 1 point in 18 straight games after they won in Ottawa last night. 3-2, Danton Heinen, Tim Schaller, Jake DeBrusk each scored once. DeBrusk the game winner in the third period. Bruins now off for the All-Star break. Their next game is Tuesday night at TD Garden against Anaheim.